Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, March 20, 2015. South Sudanese in rebel-held territory say the war must end now.
I have no hope. I don't know when this fighting will end or not. It all depends on the influence of people outside of here.
And the head of the World Food Program embarks on a visit to South Sudan to raise awareness about food insecurity.
It is a huge number of people who are affected by hunger and malnutrition, and most of the people who are facing real problems are in the three conflict-affected states of Unity, Upper Nile, and Jonglei.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. After more than 15 months of deadly conflict in the country, rebel forces in opposition-held territory are still determined to hold off government forces after peace talks recently collapsed in Addis Ababa. VOA's East Africa correspondent Gabe Joslow visited Lankien, an area under the control of rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar, and has this report.
On the run from conflict, these families have sought refuge near the marshland in Lankien, an area under the control of the rebel opposition. Almost entirely from the ethnic Nuer community, many came from the towns of Malakal and Bor, having witnessed some of the worst fighting between rebel and government forces since the war broke out in December 2013. They are among some 1.5 million internally displaced across South Sudan. Running low on patience, 67-year-old Chuan Bie Duap is losing faith that the crisis will be resolved anytime soon.
I have no hope. I don't know when this fighting will end or not. It all depends on the influence of people outside of here.
Lankien, in northeastern Jonglei State, is a stronghold for the opposition, which controls territory up to the Ethiopian border. The people who fled here have mixed in with the local community. There are no overcrowded camps like in other parts of the country, but their presence is putting a strain on local resources. Nirol County Commissioner Peter Thie says because this is seen as a safe place, there are now more IDPs than residents.
They are coming here for the safety. Here in Nirol, we have a so-called natural defense. One thing is a river, in which there is no access for the government to cross the river.
But government troops are not far away, and they control most of the major trading routes. While the area has stayed peaceful so far, there are concerns the failure of recent peace talks between the government of President Salva Kiir and the opposition led by his former deputy Riek Machar could inflame the conflict. Back in Juba, South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe insists the government is committed to continuing talks despite its apparent military advantage.
It is not difficult for the government today to say no more negotiation, but we are going on an offensive. And if the government so decides, it can easily flush out the rebels within the shortest possible period. But we are not for that because we don't want to lose more lives.
Brigadier General William Kuol Chol of the opposition says his forces also are not interested in escalating the conflict and stand ready only to protect their people.
The operation is to defend ourselves from the enemy because we are not here to aggress anybody. And why I'm here is not my choice. It is the choice of those oppressors, the regime of Salva Kiir in Juba.
Both sides have been accused of committing serious violations during the conflict, including ethnically targeted killings. And despite their apparent goodwill, deep distrust persists and low-level fighting continues. A vulnerable population losing patience and hope remains stuck in the middle. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Lankien, South Sudan.
The executive director of the World Food Program, or WFP, Ethrin Kosin, begins a three-day visit to South Sudan that will take her to areas affected by the conflict. The United States ambassador to the UN agencies in Rome, David Lane, is traveling with Kosin. WFP's Regional Information Officer in Nairobi says the visit is aimed at raising awareness about food insecurity, which threatens millions of South Sudanese in Jonglei, Upper Nile, and Unity State. Charles McDonald says some of the 2.5 million South Sudanese face acute hunger, and the situation could become worse if the conflict continues.
The executive director has come both to make sure that she's got the most current understanding of what the situation is here, so that she can then continue raising awareness of how important the humanitarian response is here, because what she wants to do is make sure that people have not forgotten how important it is that we continue supporting the innocent men, women, and children who are basically victims of this conflict, who are bearing the brunt of this conflict.
Your press release dated the 20th of March, that is today, is saying an estimated 2.5 million people are facing acute hunger, unsure of where their next meal is coming from. Now, which areas are badly affected when we talk about the geographical locations in South Sudan?
It is a huge number of people who are affected by hunger and malnutrition. And most of the people who are facing real problems are in the three conflict-affected states of Unity, Upper Nile, and Jonglei. But there are also a lot of people who are displaced by fighting and are in other states, in Warup and Lakes and in the Equatorias. And then in addition to that, there are, of course, people who have fled into neighboring countries and are refugees in Ethiopia or Uganda, Sudan, or Kenya. But within South Sudan, the most severe food insecurity is in the three conflict-affected states, as well as in neighboring areas where large numbers of people have been displaced and where the markets may be disrupted because of problems with transport systems due to the conflict.
WFP is projecting that it wants to assist like 3 million people in South Sudan this year, including life-saving emergencies for people who are affected by the conflict. How are you going to do that? And do you have enough money to undertake this operation?
We are hoping that we will have enough money, but at this point we do have a shortfall of about $277 million for the next 6 months. It does take a tremendous amount of resources to be able to provide the assistance that the people of South Sudan need in this time of conflict, especially because even in the best of times when there isn't a conflict, the infrastructure is very limited, and so we do have to pre-position most of the food that we're going to need in about 60% of the country that becomes inaccessible by road during the rainy season. And that's just without a conflict. We are pre-positioning food now in areas that we know we aren't going to be able to reach by road or river once the rains come. And that reduces the cost of the operation and our reliance on air drops and air lifts. But if we aren't able to meet our pre-positioning targets because we don't have the resources or because there are problems with accessing those areas, then it will mean that we will be more reliant on air operations during the rainy season and the rest of the year in order to be able to continue providing assistance.
I remember 3 months ago, WFP staff was picked by gunmen in Malakal, and up to today, we have not heard about where he is or whether he has been released. How safe are your workers in these areas that are badly affected?
You know, want to remind all parties to the conflict that they have a responsibility under international law to protect humanitarian workers and civilians from the effects of this brutal conflict.
That's Charles McDonough, WFP Regional Information Officer. She was speaking to me from Juba earlier today. A new report says there were both advances and setbacks in food security in 2014. Poverty was reduced last year and the number of hungry people declined. However, conflict, climate and disease disrupted food production. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The International Food Policy Research Institute has released its Global Food Policy Report. IFPRI Director General Shengen Fan lists some of the accomplishments of last year.
We have achieved some progress. For example, we paid more attention to nutrition. We also think water hygiene are very important in solving children's undernutrition. We have also seen a new commitments on trade and climate change and focus on family farming. The year 2014 was a year of family farming. So we made enough progress on various fronts.
But Fan says 2014 had its share of threats to food security.
For example, persistent conflicts, re-emerging of zoonotic diseases, avian influenza, Ebola, and continued extreme weather shocks, typhoon in the Philippines, rising food safety scandals, Taiwan, mainland China, and beyond. Higher prices of nutritious foods such as vegetables and fruits, despite the very stable grain prices for the last 4 or 5 years.
Syria topped the list of conflicts in 2014 with its regional impact. Somalia and South Sudan are other examples of how conflict threatens food security for millions of people.
We have seen increased correlation between conflicts and increased malnutrition in many parts of the world. In the rest of the world, we have achieved tremendous progress in cutting hunger and malnutrition, although the level is still very high. But it is in some of the conflict zones, the malnutrition is actually rising.
Fan says climate change has long-term consequences on food security. He says there are still some skeptics, despite the overwhelming number of studies confirming its effects.
Increased floods, cyclones, droughts definitely should change their mind. And the extreme weather events will happen more frequent and more extreme. That will affect the ability of human beings in producing more food and more nutritious food.
The Global Food Policy Report says conditions for thousands of people fleeing violence in northern Nigeria, Central African Republic, and Mali were made worse by low rainfall and drought. It says that a lack of rain threatened the food and nutrition security and livelihoods of both hosting communities and refugees. The report adds the occurrence of both weather shocks and conflicts may not be coincidental, saying that abnormally high temperatures in Sudan and South Sudan strongly raise the risk of conflict. The IFPRI Director General says lessons about food security were also learned during the Ebola crisis.
The first lesson we learn is our global food system is very vulnerable to diseases. Ebola has huge impact on people's access to nutritious food. The production was interrupted, the market was disrupted, the trade does not come. For example, some of the rice exporting countries were very reluctant to send their grains to the Ebola-affected countries.
The International Food Policy Research Institute also says middle-income countries play a pivotal role in eliminating hunger and malnutrition. It says while Brazil, China, India, Indonesia, and Mexico may be rising economic powerhouses, middle-income countries are home to more than 360 million hungry people.
They are facing triple burden of malnutrition. Hunger, 50% of the world's hungry people live in these countries. Then lack of micronutrients, vitamin A, zinc, iron, and also increased obesity and overweight. So they are facing triple burdens. And the second burden, third burden, are rising very quickly.
The IFPRI report calls on governments of middle-income countries to reshape their food systems, to focus on nutrition and health, closing the gender gap in agriculture, and improving rural infrastructure. Fan says the report will be used to influence the writing of the Sustainable Development Goals. They'll soon succeed the Millennium Development Goals. He says there could be as many as 17 SDGs compared to 8 for the MDGs, and they could contain nearly 170 target areas. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, CARE International plans to stop providing health services in Twitch East County in Jonglei State. That story is coming up.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you and your community make a difference in developing your country?
By following laws. Mostly this goes to the youth because they like calling out as in breaking laws. So if they follow proper laws, this can bring our country back. Then by being creative, they should create their own jobs not just waiting to be given jobs and house.
It comes first from knowing each other. I should get to know my neighbor until to the point that we are so related that we can even do something together. If it is communal work, because I know this neighbor, we've been talking to each other, we can always mobilize ourselves and do something.
We can be more of job creators only and only through work and making money that the country can really develop.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A Juba-based think tank says oil companies active in South Sudan are not respecting many of the environmental protection provisions in the country's Petroleum Act. A study conducted by the SAD Institute warns that this could severely damage the country's environment. Philip Thornalew reports from Juba.
After independence in 2011, South Sudan embarked on a journey to ensure that the young nation's wealth of natural resources is properly managed. As a result, the Petroleum Act was drafted in 2012. The legislation aims to manage the petroleum industry in an ethical, sufficient, transparent, and accountable manner. But 3 years later, experts say little has been achieved. In fact, SAD Institute researcher and trainer Neal Tidmamir said the law has only been minimally implemented.
Only 23% of the general standards, I mean environmental management system, environmental and social impact assessment, and all these 23% has no reference to the provisions in the Act. So in other words, the Act has not been implemented, and this means that the ministry need to step up and implement all the provisions of the Act to make sure that the environment is protected.
Tin Mahmoud was speaking at a lecture at which the SAD Institute presented the results of its study to the public. Tin Mahmoud says Section 100 of the Petroleum Act requires, quote, comprehensive social and environmental audit of the oil exploration activities and the impacts determined. He says this is something the Ministry of Petroleum must ensure to address environmental degradation caused by oil activities in Unity and Upper Nile states. But Tin Mahmoud says SAD Institute researchers found that only 38% of environmental assessment required by the Act are being undertaken, and just 20% of the Act's environmental regulations are being observed. He says oil companies have implemented less than a third of recommendations for environmental management systems called for in the Act. Tin Mahmoud lauds the oil companies for contributing half of their revenues to environmental protection funds, but says they must do more.
Because if we delay it, then we, the South Sudanese, are the ones who are going to be affected. We are the ones who have our oil. We are the ones who have our environment. And in our environment, we get other resources like water, like trees, like soil for agriculture. And this is being destroyed by the oil activities.
Officials at the Ministry of Petroleum and Mining say they have neither the expertise nor the resources to enforce the Act. And with the price of oil down sharply since the middle of last year and South Sudan 15-month-old conflict is still rolling, particularly in oil-producing parts of the country, Petroleum Ministry Undersecretary Machar Achieng says oil companies are reluctant to invest in South Sudan.
So, in fact, the future of the oil industry is bleak. Four of the oil prices left of the route where it evacuated our oil to the international markets, and then the harm we have inflicted on ourselves.
Achieng says the fighting in South Sudan has led to the closure of oil fields in Unity State and sludge daily production of crude from about 260,000 barrels a day to 160,000. Andrew Asiba, head of the University of Juba Environment Studies, says many people in South Sudan simply do not understand the importance of environmental conservation.
Environment is always put at the last agenda. Nobody takes it serious. But as I said from the very beginning, environment is you. You must protect. If you protect environment, you are protecting your own life. If you don't protect it, you are exposing yourself to pollution and you will suffer the consequence.
Asiba says some of the most serious consequences of oil-related activities include contamination of water sources and soil. A study by German NGOs released last month found that well water in Unity State has been polluted by oil activity. The study says there has been, quote, abnormal rise in livestock mortalities in areas where the pollution was found. Asiba says lawmakers should give the Petroleum Ministry the legal tools it needs to impose the 2012 Act's environmental provisions. Several members of parliament attended the lecture. They said an environment bill was presented to the National Assembly in 2011. 4 years later, it is still being examined. Experts say until that law is passed, it will be difficult to impose rules for companies whose activities, including oil exploration, could negatively affect South Sudan's environment. Oil is the backbone of South Sudan's economy, bringing in nearly all of the government's revenue. All of the oil companies that were contacted for this report declined to comment. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
Authorities in Twitch East County say Care International will be withdrawing its healthcare services in the county. The commissioner of Twitch East says losing the aid agency's health services will be a big blow to the people of Twitch East, although Care International will continue to provide some food security assistance in the county. VOA fellow Michael Atit reports.
Care International, a U.S.-based humanitarian organization which has provided emergency water sanitation, hygiene services, and nutrition assistance to thousands of needy people in Twitch East County for the past 10 years, will withdraw the health services in June this year. Twitch East County's Commissioner Dow Akoi says Care International officials informed him on Wednesday that Care is planning to stop providing health services in the county but will continue to provide other aid.
They pull out from that sector and they are going to remain in business just only for the food security and just for the livelihood. These are the very small components of the project. But the big project that was health is going to be end in June. So in June, PEC will be lacking health services.
Akoi says Twitch East County has 16 primary health care units, which receives critical staffing support from Care. He says medicines are provided by the government, while nutrition services of children are offered by the agencies. But he says the two are connected.
The qualified nurses have been paid by the Care. But now, if they are falling out from that field or for that project, that means the nurses we are qualified, they are going to lose their job. And the government are not able to provide the money for the qualified nurses.
Commissioner Akoi is calling on the Jonglei State Government to help improve the health department so that Twitch East residents can continue to receive medical services. Jonglei State Health Minister Angong Kwol says Care International was connected by both the Interchurch Medical Agency, or IMA, and the Minister of Health about the Twitch East pullout.
What we know so far is that the contract will end by 30th of June this year. Now it is up to Care to apply after that deadline for extension, or they don't apply. So the issue of Care pulling out doesn't come in because they had a contract which they should actually honor up to 30th of June. 30th of June comes when they don't wish to extend or apply the new application. Then by that time, there will be a new bidding process involving any other partner who want to apply in the area.
Funding from the World Bank also helps support health services in Twitch East County. But Kwol says Care International has been the leading health care provider in Twitch East County. He says there is a process of auditing NGOs working in Jonglei, particularly in Greater Bor. The auditing began in Bor County and now shifted to Twitch East. Who does the auditing? Is it connected to Care's pullout? The commissioner says Care has not offered any explanation as to why they are pulling out, but says Care is expected to turn one of its services to food security. Twitch East County Commissioner Dow Akoi says the IMA, together with the State Minister of Health, should quickly seek out new agencies to replace the loss of services by Care International. Efforts to contact Care International officials by phone and email for comment on this story were unsuccessful. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
Jacob Achiek prepared that report for VOA from Juba. The United Nations is calling on African countries affected by terrorism to draw up legislation that would enable authorities to cross into other countries to pursue suspected terrorists. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the story for VOA from Yaoundé.
Jean-Paul Laborde, Executive Director of the United Nations Counter-Terrorism Committee, says terrorism suspects are escaping because police are not permitted to cross national boundaries without a warrant.
Of course, there is more to be done, not only by the international community, but also at the regional level, in terms of police cooperation, which is already well done among the countries of Central Africa. But it's also needed to establish a link with the other parts of Africa, especially with ECOWAS and with the countries of this region.
Laborde says he is visiting Cameroon with United Nations counter-terrorism partner organizations to encourage more cooperation among West and Central African states, which have been fighting the Boko Haram insurgency, which has spilled outside of Nigeria's border the last few years.
We have here with us other organizations such as Interpol. It means that with all the organizations, we'll put recommendations and we'll, of course, follow up to get the necessary support to combat terrorism in the full compliance with the rule of law.
Boko Haram militants have been fighting for 6 years to impose a strict form of Sharia law across northern Nigeria. That fight has spilled over borders into Cameroon and Chad, and has taken on a new international dimension since Boko Haram declared allegiance earlier this month to the Middle East-based terrorist group called Islamic State. Earlier this year, Nigeria, Niger, Chad, Benin, and Cameroon agreed to create a regional force of more than 8,000 troops to fight Boko Haram and have begun cross-border military operations. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And that report by Kinzeka from Yaoundé brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song South Sudan Independence by Dynamic.
Up in my day. Woman can gali. In a mark there. Kedai no asa. Ina ligo independence, isin tai dynamic, wele talo tuko de, apuma de. Belete na South Sudan ligo independence, dunia kulugali ina nasigo wikalis, minjubale turiti na badaguna woyoi, mashakin futu, belete na jedi. Belete na ligo, 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 South Sudan ligo, belete na ligo. Gebila taki, gebila tani kulu sawa. Motoro kanenzil, wajo jo jo jo. Nina kulu wakulu min sahan wahi. Sibu tatani leyalte ina de South Sudan. Wajaya belete na ligo, belete na ligo, belete na ligo, independence ligo, belete na ligo. Belete na ligo. Waya ya ya ya. Umataki. Oh la 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 la. Abutaki. Ana kelimu. Akutaki. Ona. Okutaki. Okutata. Peace out Sudan. Nina kulu. Nina kulu wa hit mama. Nina kulu wa hit. South Sudan. Nina kulu wa hit. Kedena Abinu Beleteina to South Sudan. Oh yeah!
We've been listening to Dynamic with that song about South Sudan's independence. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and have a good weekend. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. South Sudan.